abused. People abused him verbally. When he was betrayed, his brothers betrayed him. He was lied about. Potiphar's wife falsely accused him. And he was neglected. When he did good, he was returned with evil. But instead of becoming bitter because of people and circumstances, Joseph responded to that time of his life in the presence of God. That was one of the themes that we saw repeated many times, that the Lord was with him. The Lord was with Joseph. And just while we're thinking about bitterness at the outset of our lesson today, when we're bitter, we have the attitude of a victim, that somehow we have been the victim of ill treatment. But whether we recognize it or not, when we are bitter, we are making a choice. And you've heard of someone reacting a way that's almost like second nature. Well, that is also a way that we talk about people doing something that they do it without even thinking. But we're still making choices when we react in bitterness. Even if we feel like it's second nature to us, we don't even have to consciously make a choice. We are choosing to be bitter. And to counteract that bitterness, just as Joseph counteracted his circumstances, we respond by trusting that God is here. He is in action according to Romans 8:28. He is working all things together for good. God's purpose for my life as a believer and for yours is not to make us comfortable. It is to have me conformed to the image of his Son. So, Joseph was going through lessons for life that prepared him for promotion that we saw in the last chapter, chapter 41. And in today's lesson, we're going to see that those life lessons also prepared him for the important process of restoration, to be restored with those who had sinned against him. Last week, I introduced you to a story that I read on the news about a man called Ed Smith. Ed Smith was 17 years old when he was shot at close range in the face with a shotgun by one of his school friends, a friend called John. Ed was blind from that moment and he struggled with the consequences. His hopes of engineering were dashed. Who would want a relationship with a person who was blind and had their face blown away? He was alive, but there was a sense in which he had lost his life. But whatever happened to John, the young man who shot him? Well, John was charged with assault, but as a juvenile, there was no consequence. Sometime later, and the article didn't say how many months later or if it was years later, John was involved in an accident. He was hit in the back of the head somehow and resulted in him being in a coma. Someone in that trauma recovery team suggested that Ed go in and visit him. You know that how sometimes someone, when they wake up from a coma, their memory is lost and they need some kind of visual cue or audible cue, something that will jog their memory. Well, someone in that recovery team had the idea that Ed should go in and visit him in hospital. And reluctantly, Ed agreed to go in there. He did go, but he didn't want to. He said that it was the most difficult thing that he had ever done in his life. And he went in and he said, hello. But that was all he could do. He then just left. He didn't want to be there. The story of Joseph is different in detail, but also in outcome. In chapter 45, you read there of the restoration of Joseph's relationship with his brothers. So there are four chapters, 42 through 45, that record the details of this dramatic Bible story and the restoration. Oh, okay.
He took the shot at Richard. He would have killed him.
Right? Yes. Yeah. So Ed was at a party with his girlfriend. He and his girlfriend were chatting. And John, his school pal, had taken a shotgun to the party with him. And so Ed turned to John and said, come on, John, you've brought a shotgun here with you. And he turned back and then started talking to his girlfriend. And there was a tap on his shoulder. He turned around and John had the shotgun pointed right at his face and he shot him. Immediately, Ed fell to the ground. He was blind and he thought, I'm going to die. But John had taken the pellets out of the shotgun cartridge. It was the cork in the cartridge and the gunpowder that hit him in the face and blinded him. And then Ed was blind for the rest of his life. He couldn't handle it. Some of the specialists would say, you're blind. And that really made him angry. And because he couldn't handle it, he went up onto the top floor of a car park, a multi-story car park, and he walked along the parapet to see if he could do it. But if he didn't, he'd fall off and he'd be dead. And he thought, well, that's okay, because I don't have a life anymore. So that was a follow-up, another episode in that story. But it's a different outcome for Joseph. There is a real care that Joseph has for his brothers, and there is a real restoring of that relationship in chapter 45. So because it's four chapters, we're not going to cover all the details of this story. But let me suggest, first of all, if you're in chapter 45, if you turn there to see the end of the story, let me suggest, first of all, something in the background. So in chapter 45, verse 5, you can see that Joseph recognized that the Lord had sent him on ahead. God did send me before you to preserve life. And then verse 5, it goes on to say that the Lord had done this not only to preserve life, but specifically to preserve his brothers' lives and their children. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be eating nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So not only were many people in Egypt spared, but God had done this specifically to care for his brothers, their children, and his father. So the Lord had arranged the circumstances that sent Joseph there. Secondly, in the background, the Lord arranged the circumstances that brought the brothers back in contact with Joseph. If you turn to chapter 41 and verse 56, there's a great famine over all the face of the earth. The Lord was the one who brought this. And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians, and the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And even though the brothers did not recognize Joseph, if you now look in chapter 42, verses 7 through 8, though they didn't recognize Joseph, he did recognize them. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them, but made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them. And he said unto them, Whence come ye? And they said, From the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew not him. So Joseph doesn't reveal himself to them as if nothing had happened. He doesn't resume the relationship, nor does he take revenge. He isn't in a state of bitterness of soul. Now that he has the upper hand, he could easily have got even. But though he doesn't resume the relationship, and he doesn't retaliate, there is something, verse 9, that Joseph does begin to do. He begins to test them. And if you look in verse 9, it's interesting that the way Joseph responds in testing his brothers is in some way connected to his recognition that this was God working out his word. He was controlling all things to fulfill his revealed purpose. The story of Joseph doesn't give us the how-to of restoration. It doesn't go through and say, do this when this happens. It doesn't say, well, you should now set tests on people before you restore your relationship with them. That's not the instruction that this passage gives. It does give us this one thing that is foundational, and that is the foundational assurance that God is in control of all that befalls us, even the evil actions of others, that we should trust him, that he is in control. Now, that doesn't suggest that we should be inactive, but it does show us that this is the foundational assurance that we should have. My life is in his hand. It's in his hand for his time, and he takes care of me. So number two, with that playing in the background, then let's consider, how did Joseph test his brothers? And there are three main tests. So we just read chapter 42, verses 7 and 8 and 9. And if you look now in verse 10, the end of verse 9 and verse 10, he treats them roughly, verse 7, and calls them spies. So this is the first way that he tests them. He treats them roughly, he accuses them of being spies, and then he puts them in prison for 3 days. So again, verse 14, ye are spies. And then in verses 16 and 17, send one of you and let him fetch your brother, and ye shall be kept in prison, that your words may prove whether there be any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely ye are spies. And he put them all together into ward 3 days. So that's the first test. He treats them roughly, puts them in prison for 3 days as spies. Second test. When he releases them, he lets them go, but he keeps Simeon. In chapter 42, verse 24. So, He binds Simeon before them. I'm just trying to find, yes, verse 24, end of the verse. And he turned himself about from them and wept and returned to them again and communed with them and took from them Simeon and bound him before their eyes. So he lets them go back, but he binds Simeon before their eyes. And then he puts their money back in their sacks. Verse 25. This is part of the second test. You could further divide it. I just organized it into three main tests. Then Joseph commanded to fill their sacks with corn, to restore every man's money into his sack, and to give them provision for the way. And thus did he unto them. And he requires that Benjamin come with them to verify their story. Verse 20. But bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die. And they did so. So these are the tests connected with their first visit to Egypt. The third test comes when they return in chapter 43. They come again. The famine is still sore. They run out of food. And this time he tests them by treating them well on their return. So in chapter 43, verse 33 and 34, he treats them well. He has them in his own home and he feeds them. But again, chapter 44, he puts their money in their sacks again. And this time he puts his own cup in Benjamin's sack. Now he is making the test go more specific. Now he is focusing in on Benjamin. And then in verse 9, we could start reading there. With whomsoever of thy servants it be found, both let him die. This is talking about his cup. And he will be my Lord's bondman. And he said, now also let it be according unto your words. He with whom it is found shall be my servant, and ye shall be blameless. Then they speedily took down every man his sack to the ground and opened every man his sack. And he searched and began at the eldest and left at the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. So now Joseph was to be Joseph's bondslave. And in verse 17, he lets the others go away. He sends them away, get out of my sight, go in peace. But now Benjamin was to be his bondman. So three main tests. But why would Joseph test his brothers? Are we told anything why Joseph should do this? So number one, I think there are three answers we could give to that. Number one, we skipped over chapter 42, verses 21 through 22. Somebody like to read those verses? Genesis 42, verses 21 and 22.
And they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required.
And then verse 23 tells us that when they're having this conversation, they're talking about their guilt. They are not aware that Joseph understands. he hears, and that's why verse 24, he turns around and weeps. Joseph isn't hard-hearted towards his brothers. He cares about them. So why is he testing them? He is testing them to see the state of their heart. It seems that the test has to go further. There's something more that he needs to become aware of. So, can I ask us to do an exercise? If you'd find chapter 37, verse 2, it's an arithmetic exercise. Chapter 37, verse 2. Joseph is how old?
17.
And now would you like to find chapter 41, verse 46? Now he's 30. So how many years have elapsed since Joseph was sold into slavery and the time that he interprets Pharaoh's dream? 13 years. Now would you like to find chapter 45 and verse 6? And this is kind of a trick one. This isn't telling his age, it's telling about something that shows us a passage of time. How many years have passed since Joseph interpreted Pharaoh's dream?
The first 2 years had already passed.
Okay.
So I'm not sure when he interpreted it at that point.
So if there were 2 years of famine, what came before the 2 years of famine?
The 13 years of bondage.
Okay, but there was something between those 13 years of bondage.
7 years of plenty.
7 years of plenty. Mm-hmm. So there's 13 years, 7 years, and 2 years. That's 22 years. 22 years since Joseph's brothers sold him into slavery. And yet, what's going on in their conscience? They're still guilty. This guilt has stuck with them and is still plaguing and pricking their conscience. So to resume his relationship with them, if you look back, please, at chapter 42, verse 9, it struck me that Joseph's dealings with his brothers is in connection with him remembering the dream. To resume his relationship with them, Joseph could be used by these brothers if they were in the same state of heart as they were. And so now he is finding out that they are still guilty, that he might be used, in fact, as a way of helping them to have relief from that guilt. It's interesting as well in verse 18 when Joseph is talking to them, 42 verse 18. He tells them that I fear God, something that they should have. That was what they needed in their relationship. They needed a relationship with God where they feared him. And I think this is also played out that Joseph would be testing them to see what was in their heart so that he could help them is also played out in chapter 45, verses 5 through 9. Those many references that he makes there to God being the one who arranged these circumstances. So back in chapter 45, verse 5, when it actually comes to the point of restoring, he says, "Now therefore, be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life." That was God that did this. That was God that was working, even through what they did, that they should fear the Lord. They should be helped in their relationship with him. Why should Joseph test his brothers? It could be a way of helping them in their relationship with the Lord. Number two, it was a test of their integrity. When they go with the money in their sacks, how would they respond to that? And then number three, it would be a test for their care for their father and for one another. So I think that's part of the reason that they have that he has Simeon bound right in front of them. And what about Benjamin? When they come the second time, they bring Benjamin with them. And Judah, who was the leader in the plan to get rid of Joseph, to sell him into slavery, does he care about the last of Rachel's sons? So there's an interesting way that Joseph is spoken of and Benjamin is spoken of. In chapter 37 and verse 3, what is the way that Joseph and Benjamin are spoken of? Chapter 43, and if you could compare that with chapter 44, verse 20.
What was the verse in
43? 44, verse 20, and 37, verse 3. Chapter 37, verse 3, compared with chapter 44, verse 20. They are both Rachel's, but they are both called. So Joseph is called the son of his old age. And when he speaks of Benjamin, that's how he speaks of him as well. So there, he is testing them. How do they have a care now for their father? Do they have a care now for one another? And what was the result of the test? What do the tests reveal? So chapter 42, verse 9. Here's this scripture again that connects Joseph remembering the dream with how he treats his brothers. Joseph's dream came true. He dreamt that his brothers would bow down to him. But when it did happen, Joseph was a changed person. He recognized that God was working out his word. So his word, that dream, that revelation that God gave to him, God was working it out. But the dream was not for Joseph's exaltation. When he was a 17-year-old and he had that dream, he had the view that he was the big one and they were the little ones. Now when the dream comes to realization, to fulfillment, and he is above his brothers, he is not above them for his exaltation. He is above them for God's purpose, to be a servant to them. And again, I think that's why verse 18, Joseph says of himself, I fear God. So part of what is going on here, Joseph does not retaliate because he sees himself as God's servant. And another part of what's going on here, part of what prompts this course of testing, is to help them trust in the Lord. That God was working in this for their good, not for their evil. Number two, the second result of this testing. Remember how the brothers, verse 21, are plagued by guilt? Chapter 42, verse 21. We are verily guilty concerning our brother. In verse 28, when they return back to Canaan and they find that the money is in their sack's mouth, what do they think? Well, it says that their heart failed them and they were afraid, but what do they think about their relationship with God at this point? Chapter 42, verse 28. That God was against them. That God was... So when you have an unexpected amount of money in your bank account, what do you think? Yes, that's right. We do respond to the blessings in different ways, but they responded to this blessing as if they didn't know how to understand it. We also see, thirdly, how Jacob responds in chapter 43. And we're not going to go into the details of Jacob. But there is a lot of information there about Jacob and how he lets Benjamin go back with the brothers. But he does not trust the Lord. And he, even chapter 43, verse 11, he sends fruit to go with the brothers. Chapter 43, verse 11. Does that ring a bell with you? Has Jacob ever done anything like that before? With Esau. With Esau. And who was Jacob trusting to solve that relationship problem?
Himself.
So,
Jacob didn't really have a strong relationship with the Lord.
That's right.
All his life.
That's right. And if
old age, he would have.
Even in his old age, you're right. If you look at chapter 42, verse 36. Chapter 42, verse 36. We are told that all things work together for good, for them that love God, to them that are called according to his purpose. But when these things are happening to Jacob, what does he say? All these things are against me. That God is not in this time of testing and loss. So we see the result in Jacob's life. We see number four, that Judah cared for his father and was willing to put his life in Benjamin's place because he had promised to his father that nothing will harm the child. And then the fifth thing is back in chapter 45, that Joseph believed God is acting in it all. That he is the one who brought me here. He is the one who has sent me to preserve life and to take care of you, that God sent me before you to preserve your posterity. Repeatedly, five times, Joseph gives glory to God. Not only does he recognize it, but he is telling his brothers this. He wants to assure his brothers that the things they saw as the great threats were actually the ways that God was working in his goodness to do them good, that they should trust him. Instead of fearing Joseph, they should fear God. So what are the lessons for me? In conclusion, what are the lessons for me? Number one, the guilt that we carry needlessly because we won't confess our sins to God or make it right with those we've wronged. We can keep that for a long time. They kept it for 22 years. And there are consequences for that. When I'm guilty and my conscience is not clear, I'm fearful. When tests come, my heart fails. When bad times or blessings come, I don't know how to interpret them. I can't tell, is God chastening me? I can't tell if this is a bad thing or a good thing. I don't know how to understand them. Number two, a second lesson for me. I should trust the Lord with my loved ones. That was part of the big challenge for Jacob. Jacob couldn't trust the Lord with Benjamin. And as you saw in his time where there was a problem in his relationship with Esau, when that problem came, he wanted to control everything. He wanted to batten down the hatches and make sure that nothing was going to touch that. But he couldn't really. And he couldn't really keep Benjamin either. There are things that are dear to us. There are people that are dear to us. We don't really worry about the things that aren't important to us, but we worry about the things and the people that are. We should trust the Lord with those relationships and those things. Number three, I should trust the Lord with the wrongs. And, you know, it's very easy for us to think about angry men or bitter men, but there are angry women and there are bitter women. There are bitter children. There are angry children. There are bitter and angry Christians. And while this passage doesn't tell us the how to restore, it does tell us that foundational to our lives and restoring relationships is the trust that the Lord is working out his plan, even through wrong things that happen to us. Romans 8:28 is God working, is at work. So it does show us the importance of restoring our relationships, but undergirding it is the assurance and comfort that the Lord is in control. And then the fourth thing that happens. How long did we say had transpired? How much time had passed between Joseph being 17 and this point? 22 years. So Joseph is now how old? 39. And over that time, Joseph's life had changed. Life's lessons had softened him. He saw himself now as a servant to help his brothers, both physically and spiritually, rather than being a lord to master it over them. So a lot happens in 22 years, many life's lessons. Let's pray.